my x-ray.
That's okay. We're all a little...
powder is...
I feel like...
Okay,
here we go. This is the reading. The first card, fire, is Six of Swords, science.
What was that again, the word?
Science. I don't know that. That one, I don't understand at all. You know, but that's okay.
You said time.
Moving to new horizons or something.
I didn't hear the word. What was it again?
Science.
Science.
You know, like mad scientist. Second card in water. The priestess.
We saw her in this chapter.
Mm-hmm. Third card, air, lust.
Oh, we saw her in this chapter.
Yeah, right, exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's going to blow your mind, this whole. The fourth card is Six of Cups, pleasure.
Do we have a theme arising here?
Yeah, right. And the fifth card, Four of Swords, truce.
And what's the word with the Four of Swords?
Truce.
T-R-U-C-E.
The sixth card, the universe.
Wow.
Isn't this amazing?
Yeah. And I have to ask every time, because I don't have my cards in front of me, the universe in top, it relates to judgment, is that correct?
That's the world.
The world.
Yeah,
the world.
Oh, it's Aeon, that's judgment. Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The Arc of Influence, seventh card is Hierophant. Eighth card is Eight of Wands, swiftness.
Did you say wisdom?
No, swiftness.
Oh, swift.
Eight of Wands.
And last but not least,
Two of Cups, love. That is correct.
Okay. So that is that seems to be sort of on topic today, doesn't it? At least the way this is a strange reading for Bina, from my point of view, but we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, I'm not sure how all this can lead to understanding, because to me it looks like a very confusing reading.
Well, it starts out with science.
Yeah.
which is a kind of understanding.
Yeah, I guess.
From confusion comes the light of possibility.
Well, and, you know, the Six of Swords many times earns successes to me. Consciousness. It's a way of thinking. You know, like, okay, it's very psychoanalytical. The Six of Swords to me, because what happens is that it. It means that you're using logic to overcome emotion, which a lot of psychoanalysis is,
yeah.
You know?
I think it's clarity, finding clarity in your life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And actually, the image in the Rider-Waite is moving away from, you know, the turbulent waters into smoother waters.
Mm-hmm.
It's not necessarily a happy journey, you know? I mean, it's a painful journey.
Right.
So.
And it's very much Bina in the sense of understanding. You know, it's very interesting. There's a tale in the Kabbalah literature. I don't know if any of you know that. When Solomon asked the Lord, you know, Jehovah, you know, El, he didn't ask for understanding.
Yeah.
Yes. He asked for wisdom.
Yeah, for wisdom.
Right. So he was given wisdom, but no understanding. And that's why he had his fling with the Queen of Sheba. Is that it?
Well, you know, understanding has its limitations.
Uh-huh.
It's almost like wisdom is intuitive and understanding is analytical.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting that understanding, and the term understanding also has within it, and the English, accident of that uh-huh. word, is it has a subservience to it.
Uh-huh.
You know, understanding is to, you know, get down under something. It is to, in some ways, the way you learn, the way you understand something is to get under it.
Yeah.
And dig yourself out.
Yeah, and be a servant, too.
You dig down
in. Serve.
Yes.
You serve.
Exactly.
Also,
and
the piece is about intuition, so it's using your intuition here.
This is interesting, though. The word for science, though, one of the best ways to understand science is that science is often counterintuitive.
That's the original theorem. You know,
yeah, that some of the breakthroughs in science often come at, oh, that doesn't, you know, that just, you know, has never made sense before. It's almost breaking through, you know, which is maybe another perverse way of understanding is that it breaks through. It's subversive.
You know how I sort of keep this in perspective for myself, and Bina and Kokhma and those two going on over there, is that a child can be wise. I have met some very wise children. They may not understand,
right.
but they can be wise, and they know.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So in some ways, then, understanding is sort of a wedding of experience and wisdom. You could say that understanding is merging those two together.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
All right, okay.
Well, the only reason I'm saying maybe is because I think, I don't know, wisdom to me is something that really doesn't, well, just it's what Johanna just said. It doesn't necessarily have anything to do with what you know.
Yeah.
It has to do more with how you are and how you respond to things. I don't know.
Yeah.
Hard to describe.
No, I think you got it right on the head, Mary Beth, because I mean, how many people do we know that are very intellectual and they get themselves into a bunch of crapola?
Oh, I know.
I mean, you say, you're an intelligent human being. Why is this happening to you? You know, it has nothing to do with intelligence.
No, it doesn't.
Otherwise, I would be bored. I would be bored if I didn't do these things.
Oh, were you talking about Paul? No.
No, well, not necessarily.
Hey, speaking of crazy things, shall we launch? Well, we have to do it. We have to go through who's going to read which part.
Yeah, and I have a question. I noticed in your list, in the email, you say that Dr. John D. is in the white letters, and he is, but Sophie and Barbara are also speaking in those white letters. It's, well, not speaking, it's like all telepathic. But
I think the part I was looking at was the Whore of Babylon.
Uh-huh.
Marie is the blue letters. That was the part that I was looking at specifically.
Okay.
So the white letters are just the John D. stays in the white letters. So basically we need somebody to be Marie in the blue letters and the whore in the red letters.
I want to be the whore.
Live out your fantasies while you can, kiddo.
I would say it's still out of character for me, but if you believe what's in the chapter, it's not out of character.
Oh, okay, good.
Right? You know.
Okay, does anybody want to be Marie?
Who's feeling virginal today?
Well, she's not virgin. She's a mutter of all.
Well, yes, I know.
Anybody? Anybody?
Come on, Val.
Modesty, come on, modesty.
Okay, I'll do Marie. Oh, wait, I'll be Marie.
Val's mad. She wanted to be the whore, too.
Hey, Mr. David, you want to be Mr. John D?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay. All right, so it looks like we're working backwards here. Let's see.
Well, I got dibs on Barbara, as you know.
Yeah, you do.
Barbara, so we got a Sophie. We got to have a Sophie. There's also going to be Sophie from MEV, obviously.
Okay. Anybody? Joy, are you here?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, Sophie, you are. And I guess I'll be Bruno Similac Jellyhead.
Similac? Is that a baby formula?
Yeah, right.
I think it is.
I don't know.
It is. Similac is a baby formula, which is very interesting that they even use that. I like the way they use the Illustrator, the filters, the Photoshop filters.
Did I leave out? No, actually, I didn't leave out. I don't think they say much of anything, but we do.
Lucille Ball and all of those.
Going, I thought that were incredible. And Bruno Similac, who apparently is a breaking and entering and getting into trouble with Jellyhead. So, somebody want to be Jellyhead and the clown painted doll? We got anything? This is not very long. It's just a little.
Well, you haven't taken anything yet, have you?
A little chaos. Yeah, I was going to be Bruno.
No.
Oh, okay.
Be the painted doll.
No one does anything except that.
I'll do one of those. Clown or.
And then I know we got somebody needs to be Stacia. Very short part, first page.
Oh, does she even? Oh, yeah, she does. I'll do that.
I'll
she looks
the,
kind of whorish in this picture, so I'll go ahead. You know.
I'll be the narrator. Alrighty.
I agree with Mary Beth, though. I mean, things these white letters. Some of them sound like they're mixed up between the two women and John D.
You just have to see what they're saying, really, and to get the point of it. Yeah.
Well, I think John D. has the squiggly lines around it.
Well,
right?
So do they.
Where? Let me see.
Well, for instance, on the page where it shows all of the adepts in the middle panel.
Right.
Over on the right-hand side, the third panel down, it says, John D., you're Dr. John D.
Uh-huh.
That's obviously either Barbara or Sophie talking about
that.
Oh, him,
I
so.
See. Right. Wow.
Yeah.
But, Dr. D.,
maybe they'll fix that in the absolute.
Maybe.
Marcus. Karen Briegel and her son or boy are saying.
Oh, wait, you left out the great
corn.
Wait.
Steel Ball, no relation. No. Reading Astonishing Story.
Okay, Paul. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast, Babylon the Great, mother of harlots. You forgot the intro.
That's a great quote.
Okay.
Okay, meanwhile. while, back in
Vancouver.
You were incredible.
Carnal Popes. Bruno, similar.
He's ringing the doorbell. He's going in.
He's trying to open a door while I'm trying to turn a page.
Cynthia has arrived. Oh, Cynthia.
Cynthia, we are reading. We're on the second page now.
I apologize. I was looking for Medicare for my dad.
All right.
Okay.
So we are moving down, and he is going in, and he makes himself a cup of coffee, and he walks down.
Thank you.
And then?
I love the headlines. Made over Promethea foils bank raid. Can we? No, the evil age. Can we take them seriously?
And the clown says, who's the clown who decided they were going to be the clown?
So you're Jellyhead. Good name. Quite prophetic, as it turns out.
Oh, God. Oh, mother.
Now, why do so many of them say that? Eh? Nah. Why, oh mother?
Promethea, the wine of her fornifications.
Is this what you were talking about, the filters?
Yes.
Johanna? Yeah. Okay. Vina. Sophie?
Is
that me?
Yep.
Okay, I'm looking at all the pictures. This feels like church somehow. That perfumed honey scent, that's myrrh. And this archway, it's as if I've been through it before.
Yeah, me too. Only I think it was coming the other way.
So we all know what this this thing symbolizes, right?
I hope so.
It ate the elementary canal, yeah.
Okay.
That's right.
I know, Holy right. Mother of God, Holy Mother of God, pearls. Pearl? Holy hole. Sophie, I feel strange. Why are we whispering? I'm not whispering. Sophie, why are we whispering?
I don't know. It's just so silent here. Arthur, this third sphere, this is God. This is God's third head. That's where we are. I mean, God, this is it. This is her.
And she knows us. You feel that. God knows who you are. And she doesn't hate us. She... Oh, Sophie, come and look at this. A headless woman. Okay.
This is all my Promethea stuff. Promethea's father, he said it would be returned to me if... Wait a minute, is this my stuff? It looks sort of different.
Try it on, it won't fit me. Besides, I'm already... got one.
I don't know. I think this outfit looks too big for me. Or is that how big I am when I'm Promethea?
You're pretty tall. What are all these moths? They're really beautiful. Are they sacred animals here or something?
No, we're the sacred animal here, woman. But they're familiar from somewhere. They're... Oh, wait, I know. It's the Promethea moth. Promethea Saturnitis or something.
What? Like Saturn the planet? Isn't that what that sort of three-shaped thing over the arch represents? And the way this place smells of myrrh, that's what we smell of? All of us Prometheans? It's like I said, this place, it knows us. It knows who we are.
I think we sort of belong here or something.
Yeah, or that we somehow come from here. It's almost like there's no need to even talk about it. It's, Promethea, you're back.
Yeah. Yes, I think I am. Come on, let's keep walking while I try to understand all this.
Are you still salty?
Yes, I am, but the Promethea part of me? I've been with my father. It was wonderful. It seemed to go on forever, and he told me so many things.
What did he say?
He said I'd be different once I'd climbed the tree. And he said I'd always be able to talk with him. And he said we'd meet our mother here.
Our mother? What? You mean Promethea's mother?
I think so. He wasn't really talking with words. He said that in Bina, in this black third sphere, sacred to Saturn, here's where we'd find her. Bina's the highest female sphere. The word means understanding. How that's different from Das, which means knowledge, or Chokhmah, which means wisdom, I'm not sure. Perhaps it's like...
Sophie, wait, look. Up ahead, in the blackness.
We are the powerhouse. We are the benevolent adepts, the Illuminati. John, that's somebody else now.
Yeah.
John D., you're John D. This should be Sophie. Go ahead.
Okay. John D., you're Dr. John D. You're... I saw you in Hode, but younger, and...
Barbara, that's you, I think.
These are our thoughts, Sophie. We're... What was that, you or me? I'm confused. I'm...
Come with me. And they're walking down the stairs.
He's got a different
type. We can see the lettering is different for John D.
Is it? Yeah.
It seems that way.
Oh, yeah, it is a little. It's not.
Oh, I see. It's more of a, like a pen. Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of like calligraphy.
Right, exactly. Okay.
Uh-huh.
So this
Dr.
Okay. Yes, Sophie. Go ahead.
Dr. D, sir, this is Sophia. What are you
and the other adepts doing here?
No, no, you read the script.
No child.
No child. That's what you see the difference in the lettering.
Mm-hmm.
Well, David, you have to see the difference in the lettering. Can you see the difference?
I don't really see it. I guess in the capital letters I see it. I don't see it in the, well, just one.
His stuff is written more like in an illuminated manuscript or something kind
mm-hmm.
of style.
Yeah, it's like regular script rather than comic script.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we start with the top. This is Dr. D.
Okay. That's
Sophia.
Dr. D, sir, this is Sophia. What are you and the other adepts doing here at the third sphere?
No, child, this that here is understanding. That was the all of what we sought, and so we crave no higher place. For my part, I communed with angels, told of it in the book of Enoch, Hebrew adept, sacred to the third domain. In the third realm, form becomes possible. The number one suggests single point. With two points, we may describe a line. With three points, we may enclose a space in two dimensions. We may plot a triangle. See, thus, the triangle is symbol of the element of water. It is here at Bina that all water, all compassion has its origin. At Bina is the cup that overfloweth.
Okay, now...
Sophie.
He mentioned the biblical book of Enoch and the angels it speaks of. Did they truly teach you their language, the Enochian language?
Aye. It was dictated by the spirits in my scrying glass as two were shown the tables that map all existence. Boards of 12 squares by 13 being altogether 156 and on each square were symbols. Viewed from overhead, each square appeareth like a ziggurat with flattened summit, all arrayed in rows, a mighty township. Behold, we are daughters of the understanding. Behold, the city of the pyramids.
This is such a cool picture.
Right out of Hellraiser 2. This looks like just right out of Hellraiser 2 by Clive Barker. Mm-hmm.
Well, Lon Milo, the cat has these in his work.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, well, yeah, they were well known. Okay, Sophie starts again.
The city of the pyramids, and there's somebody on top of every one.
They are adepts. Having reached here, they will never leave. On one sits Edward Kelly. We are partners with when in life. Upon another, young Jack Parson sits, betrothed to she who reigneth here. She promised if he loved her, he should burn eternally, and so he does, in endless ecstasy.
Who is she? Who rules here?
More than one name has she, more than one nature. When men know her, she is then called Revelation, for she lewdly shows herself.
Lewd? How can she be lewd?
Yet she is wanted when she stoops, when she displays her wetness and her mystery alike. When she is whore, when she is Babylon.
Dramatic picture.
You know this. This Prometheus is hanging under the cup, and that other demon is the seven-headed Hydra.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I got some juicy stuff to tell you later. Okay.
Tell me.
In context.
In context?
Kind of, I think this is the...
Jack Parson. Okay, I don't want to spoil everything. Let's keep on going.
Know me. Worship me. Swollen with passion. Where are the saints grown mad upon the sweet foam of my bosom? Scorn me, for the end of things is as stern fire about my loins that glisten damp with sacrifice. Enter me wantonly, when I am like the dreg of brothels. Be consumed by me. Burn in me.
Miss Barbara?
Okay. Oh, no. Oh, God. What's she saying? She's us, Sophie. She's us.
About the markets of the world, I am sent there until the worst of creatures may lay down with me. Though wretched and with sores, they shall not be refused. The mead of many rapes is sanctified in me and is made holy as the stars, for I am understanding.
I don't want to know. I don't want to hear anymore. It's raining. It's raining light in my head. Oh, I'm sorry. That's I don't know who that is. Okay.
Whereby they that drink the filth of my adultery shall be made clean. See, I am couched with beasts, that monsters of the primitive and formless chaos shall know me. I am she no earthly man nor woman may embrace, that yet is whore to all. Have I not fallen in thy sight? Hast thou not spat upon my name? Barbara, I think this is you.
Barbara, okay. I, when I understand sex, and then when I thought about my parents.
Oh, you know what? It was Sophie.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, so she's talking about Trish.
Okay.
Oh, okay. I, when I understood sex, and then when I thought about my parents, I walked in. I walked in on Trish and her boyfriend screwing, and I thought, oh, God.
Hast thou not hated me? Hast thou not called me harlot, that endures thy father's infinite desires and plundered every moment from her birth? Then know me. In my nakedness I am called Revelation.
Oh God, oh Holy Mother. I don't know who's saying this.
I don't know.
Oh God, oh Holy Mother. Go ahead.
In the calculation of the Hebrews shall my name be numbered 6 and 50 and 100. Then am I the world's destruction? Then am I the understanding wherein all things are concluded? Am I Babylon? Yet in my morning I am sweet and touched by none. My breath is fineness, kindness, and my milk a solace of angels.
Barbara? Barbara, look, she's changing.
You're right. She's... No, she isn't changing exactly. What is that?
That's a D there. She changes not.
Oh, she changes not. 'Tis but thine eye alone is changed with compassion, with comprehension.
Then am I the world's ease, and my breast its comfort.
Once the Greeks
Marie.
Once the Greeks shall calculate my name according to their numbering as 6 and 50 and 100, then am I the font of pity without end. Am I Marie? I don't know what that next word is.
Girded?
Girded with clouds and covered with a firmament, am I made queen of heaven?
A whore?
The whore and the Madonna, they're both there.
In my compassion, have I not stooped low so that my aspect is cast down? Behold, I am the Shekiah, I am the bride, and on the world's streets ragged go I, and reviled. In me there is descended the Sophia, that is wisdom's female face.
Sophie, but that's my... No. It has to be just a coincidence. Oh, Sophie, it's you. It's you she's talking to.
Okay. But understanding is poured out like into unto blood from me. This is hard to read.
Yeah.
Like noble wine, mine essence runs down into the earth, and therein is
degraded
and made bitter. Yet it giveth succor unto all things. Mother am I, that
sways.
I, this script is really hard to read.
Yeah, the script is hard, yeah.
Yeah, you want me to read it? Because let me read it, only because I know the typeface. Mother am I, that all sways the great dark cradle of the night. Then I, Isis, am I, Hecate. I, Selene, back am I, like to the hidden moon, or as a womb, I taketh in and I receive. Virgin am I to they that know me not, and whore am I to they who know me. Then am I scarlet and made fertile, that my passion is a great annihilation, fire that none may look upon. Then am I Babylon, and further yet am I sunk down into the world itself. Then am I Mary, that conceals her child from Herod. Am I Isis, that conceals her child from Set. And further yet am I degraded. Then am I the scarlet woman, mistress of the beast, called Crowley. Leech Hysteria, prostitute in the Paris streets. My
sexually,
Leah Hersick, prostitute in the Paris streets. My star gouged in her breast. Oh, that one. Okay. Thus does thy mother go a harlot in the world. And this is the vision of sorrow. You want to take over, Meep? Mary Beth?
Yet is that understanding by another means decanted also. As a fiery mead of spirit does it flow, that is not in its downward path corrupted. Fire of heaven is this nectar, that not in earth be soiled nor quenched. A burning moon foam, then shall this true blood, this sangreal, be carried down upon a mighty chariot. In its red vintage is distilled the moment of my dreadful understanding, unexpressed, that cometh privately in dark and silence. That is called apocalypse. Then is ignited my affection and made hot. Then am I...
Strength.
Gosh. That's so easy. Then am I strength that straddles lions and drunken on the juice of mine own flame. Am I the concubine of revelation, known and mounted with her beast, whose number is a man? Revealed to man, then is my inspiration come unto the earth a child. And is that child become a tale that strikes fire in the heart? And is that fire become a blaze, wherein thy time, man's world, must be consumed?
You know, one of the Prometheus.
In thy name, then you're the Prometheus who oversees the world's end.
Named for the moth of Saturn, where am I exalted, is she called Promethea. From understanding spilled as wisdom is she called Sophia. And this is the vision of compassion.
Pass on, daughters of understanding.
That's Maria.
Is it?
Yeah.
Uh-huh, it's in blue.
Who's Marie?
Oh. Okay.
Val.
Oh. Pass on, daughters of understanding, robed in mercy, strong in judgment. Omni art thou in victory, from splendor is thy radiance in the foundation, whence shall the kingdom be inflamed. Pass on from comprehension to that which be understood, from silence to the word that comes before. Pass from the womb of forming unto that which be
inchoate.
Pass from water unto fire, unto the highest.
I almost get it, you know? It's like with understanding, you get sorrow, and with sorrow, you get compassion.
Okay, Mr. D.
I and you, sweet spirits, are her tears that waters the earth and makes it fruitful.
I'm still trying to take this in, this responsibility. It's as if what I am, what I have to do, it's as if it was all set out even before my mom named me.
Before thou wert conceived, child, it is not most fearsome and most marvelous. Is it not most fearsome and most marvelous? Like you, I was afraid when first the angels told the dreadful things that I should do, and yet I did them.
But to understand that I'm going to preside over the end of everything?
Nay, not everything, but only that tawdry and low theater that is called the world of man. Now must you hasten on towards thy destinies, whatever they may be. The path of Daleth, that is the door, awaits thee. And that's
and
the path.
Prometheus.
And that's
this, yes,
the path
Barbara.
That leads
Barbara.
To sphere.
Barbara.
That's Barbara.
Yeah.
And that's the path that leads to sphere two, right? Maybe that's where I'll find Steve.
Mayhap, but it is here that I must take my leave of thee upon the 14th highway where abides the Empress. Fare you well, good wives. Say nothing as thou take thy leave of silence.
Okay. Oh, that's me? Okay.
Yep.
Hey, we're talking again, out loud.
Yes, Barbara, I feel so different. It's like in every new place, I'm a new person. What about you? Your holy guardian angel didn't return after... What about you? Your holy guardian angel didn't return after the abyss, like you were promised.
Yeah, the friggin'... The frig. She didn't.
Boo-boo?
Yeah, I just had to remember myself, is all. Inside, I was always this friggin' gorgeous. My ass was always this great, and I never cared a frig for nothing but doing right. You know, the path is friggin' beautiful, man. Didn't Dee say this path was the Empress? How come we don't see her?
I think this greenery is her. Mother Nature, that's the Empress. Endless fertility. It's this path that first connects the highest female force with the male, fertilizing her.
On the first date, boy, she's really a big whore.
Barbara,
hey, Barbara had a body lift, it seems.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't be able to recognize it that easily now.
Wouldn't it be so nice that one gets herself away that way?
I think this is the hardest chapter. I came in late, and I do apologize. But it was a pleasure. I know it was a struggle to read the chapter, but it was, I think, one of the harder ones to read.
It was.
You did a great job.
Well, thank you. It was all the archaic language, I think.
Yes, and the print and the darkness and, you know, and trying to take
it
in.
Black is the best contrast.
Yeah, right? Oh, yeah, wow. My eyes are hurting now.
And that was for Mary, you know, the Catholic Roman Mary, I think.
Mm-hmm. Also, there's a lot to think about in this chapter. It's just not a passing fancy.
No, it's not. It's a very deep chapter.
Absolutely.
Okay, you want to hear the dirt?
I think it gives Crowley's take on his deck better than any of the other chapters.
Yeah.
Wait to see the cards that were laid out. It'll blow your mind.
Yeah.
Oh, it is amazing. Yeah. I can't get over this. I'm telling you. I have my own little ritual I do before I lay out the cards. You know, shuffle and lay out usually. I go to the... I have it marked, you know, with a post-it, and I open up the artwork to both pages. So you see, for instance, I opened it up to Promethea. I saw the woman sitting, you know, the title page, and
right.
And then I place the cards on top of it. And I say, okay, give me some good information here. And I shuffle the cards, place them again on top. Okay, shuffle again, place them on top, and then cut them. All on top of the graphic.
Oh.
That's how I did it. But Jack Parsons, you see this Jack Parsons here?
Yes.
Now wait a minute.
Okay.
For Jack Parsons.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about Jack Parsons.
Oh yeah.
Oh,
I got some dirt on him.
I'm talking about visually.
Oh, he's the one encased in flames.
Oh, so that you weren't in this particular chapter.
No, we were in this particular chapter.
Yeah, the part where you see the city of pyramids and then...
Okay.
He's in the... Yeah, he's opposite the pyramids, the big pyramids. And, you know... Okay, you want to keep the dirt on Jack Parsons?
Go for it.
He was one of the great astrophysicists. They named a mount of the moon, the government. He has his own mount on the geography of the moon. He was one of the great magicians, and he was also the Brotherhood of Light.
Now, which one is the Brotherhood of Light?
The Brotherhood. I'm saying about the all the Brotherhoods of Light. They had a war with him. Because he was working chaos magic with Austin Spare. This is inside information, kiddos.
Wow.
He is not a nice person. He isn't.
So,
yeah, go ahead.
some of my informants back in the 70s, these people that were in their 70s and 80s,
mm-hmm.
had been in the OTO.
Right.
Uh-huh. And knew him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I also got the story about him. But the story I got, which is similar to the one you can read about in the notes, is that he worked with L. Ron Hubbard
mm-hmm.
for a while. But Hubbard was trying to take advantage of him. He was basically trying to get money out of him, which was mm-hmm. Hubbard was always doing. He was basically a con man. This is his a few years before he wrote his book Dianetics, and the which is what started Scientology, and the and of course Crowley was his disciple, but Crowley thought he was not stable, and says so.
Excuse me, Crowley was Hubbard's disciple.
Yeah, was whose disciple? Parsons or Hubbard?
Parsons was.
Okay.
Crowley's disciple.
Oh, okay.
But in Crowley's letter, he's pretty clear that he never, though he thought he was brilliant, he didn't think he was stable. and said,
that's funny for Crowley to say, yep.
They did blow himself up.
Pot calling kettle black.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That takes one to know what.
Yeah.
All right. So that's about all I got to say. But then, yeah, and there was apparently these magical fraternity stuff
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
where they were fighting with each other.
Yes, major, major fight. Lady Sarah Cunningham, who I studied with,
mm-hmm.
she was one of the people with along with Israel Rigardi. The Golden Dawn, the modern Golden Dawn Temple in Los Angeles. And they were trying to undo the damage.
Oh, that person?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
And they weren't quite successful because he had a lot of government contacts. In fact, that's why Lady Sarah had to leave. She had to go.
Now, when you say undo the damage, what are you referring to?
Well, they opened up the gates of chaos.
Uh-huh.
In the late 40s, 50s. Outside the Circles of Time is a book dedicated to that, the workings.
Okay.
And
still available?
Who did that? Who was it that wrote the answer?
That was, I have it right here. It's available. Kenneth Grant wrote it.
Kenneth Grant, right.
Outside the Circles of Time, and with Austin Spahr and everything like that. Their chaos magic. It's very funny how they elevate chaos magic, to the point in which, let's just go into it. Which basically, when you say chaos magic, it's like the opposite side of the tree. The tree is orderly, but then on the opposite side, it isn't.
By the way,
if you go to page 296 on your notes, Paul, and Prometheus notes, there's a section there on Jack Parsons.
Yeah, that's right. And if you go a little farther on the notes, so people are going to read that themselves at some point.
Yeah.
41, the Agape Lodge of Crowley's OTO, Parsons quickly went through the ranks. That was the one that my friend Joe Miller was in.
Mm.
So he didn't go through all the ranks. And then there's, down the same page, there's some talking about a British working of the Chaos Babylon working in 1989.
Mm.
And this is the one that's connected with Alan Moore. In July 2002, a British occultist, Joel Brunel, performed a chaos working, and he withdrew from chaos occultism after that time.
Now, you say Alan Moore, our writer,
yes,
is
our
associated with chaos magic?
Yeah.
OTO is associated.
Yeah, it's part of the OTO tradition to deal with some of this stuff.
I'm sorry, what is the OTO? I mean the
Order of Temple Orientis.
Oh, yes, okay.
It's an initiatory group that that was started by some German guy, and then was taken over by Crowley.
I mean, some of the members at Ning are part of. They do OTO work. I think.
The OTO is flourishing now.
Mm-hmm.
It went through a major revival back
How
in
so?
The 70s.
In the 70s, right? I thought maybe.
And there are lodges all over the. You can look it up. They've got their website. They've got lodges all over the place. And they're reasonably open. I mean, you have to go through the jump through the hoops, but they're always looking for new people to join. You know, and they do their they have their regular holidays. They do their stuff. It's sort of a slight, it's like a slightly intense church.
Mm-hmm.
It strikes me particularly male oriented.
Is what?
I could be mistaken, but it strikes me as particularly male oriented.
There are women in the OTO.
Are there?
Oh yeah, yeah. every Babylon's got to have its
word. Yeah, right. Right. Yes, so, that's so true.
I couldn't get over it.
No, I know.
It does tend to. I really don't know what his sexual politics is of the OTO today because I haven't really hung out with them people at all.
A lot of gays are in the OTO. Male gays.
Yeah.
Yeah, I find. I mean, that's my observation. Just from what I know in.
As an outsider. Right?
Yes, so as an outsider. One of. What's so interesting is Lon Milo is not gay, and he's a member of the OTO. And,
sure.
But also.
In some ways, he's one of their major. Public point people.
Right.
Yeah, he is a public point person, definitely.
Yeah.
It was funny when he spoke at the Reader's Studio. Was it 2 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
Or 3 years ago?
No, it must have been longer than that.
Longer than that? Then I think it was the year my mother passed away. So I think that was 2006.
The year before I arrived.
It was 2006. Yeah. And at the very end, we all drew a card.
Mm-hmm.
And Lon and I both drew justice.
Mm.
And I remember getting into your car, Johanna.
Mm-hmm.
And Lon was behind us getting into a limousine. And I turned my head and I watched. Three men came out and were embracing him. And he got into the limo and off he went. But I remember getting the chills because... It was a large gathering, not as large as the one, the recent Reader Studio, by any means, but it was, you know, we thought it was large at the time. And I just got the chills because I did feel I was at another end of what you might say the Justice card was about, and I find the Justice card to be a very mysterious card. In fact, the most mysterious to me of all the majors.
Well, I remember being the only one who picked, out of all the cards, I picked the Page of Pentacles. And he just did a dump because that's supposed to be the highest card.
Right.
Of
right.
all, and he just, he went, huh.
That's
yeah.
right.
And it was so funny.
Yeah. It was very weird.
Yeah, and what was so funny is that I had Outside the Circles of Time, and I brought it up to him. I says, hey, Lon, you know this book? And he totally drew a blank.
Huh.
And
well.
I mean, maybe he wanted to draw a blank.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But I was very shocked. I mean, and also those men that embraced him were possibly, I mean, when you're a member of, and you're such a high person in an order.
Oh, indeed. Oh, I'm not criticizing.
No. They pick you up. They take care
right.
of you. You know.
No. He was in a strange city. It wasn't his hometown. And people came to get him.
Right.
Oh, I understand that.
And also, he does not necessarily socialize.
No, I agree.
He'll just be there. He'll take his nap. He'll stay in his room, and then he'll do his presentation. He won't hang out with the group.
Yes, and he'll often sleep through all the lectures.
He
always attends in a suit.
Yes.
Sometimes in black tie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now this year at the. At the Omega Tarot Conference, he was on the panel, and he was very casual and very social, actually. He hung out with us in the dining hall and was,
Isn't that something?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. Maybe it's something between him and Wald as opposed to...
It could be.
Anything else. I'm not saying that that's true. I'm just saying that that's been his behavior. I think he's been to two readers' studios that I've attended, and that would be...
Well,
although Wald was there at the Omega, too, so...
That's the weirdest thing. Who knows?
Very casual, very approachable. It was the first time I had met him.
If you go up to him, he's very friendly.
Yeah.
Years ago, I saw him in Bats, and he was quite open. He actually sang and did a number of different things with people.
Well, you know, that year may have been the year in which he had his health issues also.
Yeah.
He's lost so much weight now.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, he is so slim.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
No, he looks totally different. Totally different.
Then that, maybe he was ill.
Yeah. But other than that, since this is being recorded, let me just go over.
slandered everybody and never slander some more people.
I wasn't slandering him. I enjoyed meeting him. Actually, I have to say, I got a big chuckle because his opening remarks during his presentation, he wrote up on the flip chart in big letters, waxed paper. And everybody's like, what the heck is he talking about here? He says, if you don't remember anything else I talk about, you'll remember this tip. When your cards get sticky, rub them with waxed paper.
That's funny and charming. There's no doubt about it.
On Lon Milo's YouTube, he does have these pyramids. And I don't quite understand what's going on with the pyramids. Somebody clarify that. It's 12 by 13, 156. What's that all about?
I think that's the Enochian tables and the angels. Joy, did you study that?
I haven't really.
Oh, I thought perhaps you did.
I think it is angels as well. That's what it is.
Yeah, and there's another couple that is very deeply into all of this. The Ciceros. They have an Enochian tarot.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, it creeps me out the way, frankly, the top deck from time to time creeps me out.
Yeah.
You too, Maribeth?
Yeah, a little bit.
There's something really powerful about that Enochian energy.
I know, but I don't know from I just don't know. I have a feeling it can be very dark.
But how do you use it?
They explain it if you want to use it.
It's another tradition.
Yeah.
It's different than the tarot tradition.
Yeah.
Enochian tarot is 88 cards instead of the 78.
He brings in the demons. I agree with Cynthia there. He does bring in demons.
I kind of think so. And I just recently finished another Aykroyd book on John Dee. No, it's fiction, mind you. But Aykroyd has his own point of view. I don't say I'm a scholar and I can criticize it one way or another. But he depicted John Dee as being rather a sad kind of character. Whereas Alan Moore projects him as sort of very saintly and magisterial. He sort of criticized the alchemical gold, seeking of gold aspect, and kind of depicted Dee as having a greedy side, although towards the end of his life he changed. But at any rate, it's complicated, and people have taken this, as has Crowley, to go back to this particular chapter. And since it deals with the feminine, the divine feminine, his emphasis upon the divine feminine, it would appear to me, is as in totally sexual metaphors, the Whore of Babylon, and so on and so forth. And I have some very abiding objections to that.
Well, that's actually, this does raise a point that was discussed, or was raised earlier, which is the virgin whore is a split that is very common in young men's minds, particularly young men. Men who are alienated from the mother, they do the virgin whore thing. This is very simple. And some of them put them together and some of them keep them apart. Those are two variants.
Yep.
But this is not, however, except in reflection, necessarily the way women interpret themselves. That's another story.
All religious institutions.
That deserves another voice to be told.
Yeah. That's the divine feminine herself, as opposed to how the divine feminine is perceived by other people. Yes.
Well, by, you see, by the...
this is a psychological kind of thing, I feel, rather than...
No, it's actually much deeper than psychology.
Okay.
We're actually dealing with archetypes here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
And archetypes are, you know, are before our psychology. Just because Jung uses archetypes or understands archetypes as part of his psychology, did not necessarily psychologize the archetypes.
Right.
The archetypes are always more than.
Definitely. As a matter of fact, it was the other way around. They archetyped the psychology.
Yeah,
if I could use it as a verb, yeah.
So I think that to be fair, the divine feminine defines herself in other ways, and in other ways it could be done in the same way, which is the virgin then could be seen as the divine feminine as holy unto herself. Not needing another, and therefore ultimately and always mysterious.
I was just sitting here thinking of the word mystery when you said that. That's just so weird. It's kind of like you just took it out of my head.
Mm-hmm. And then of course, then the whore issue is that's her in relationship. That's the degrading that takes place with the fall of Sophia in the pearl, or in some of the other,
and also the Shekinah on the tree. Sorry, Mary Beth.
I was just going to say there was something in the chapter here. I can't remember where it was. Let me see. Where she says, she being the divine feminine, in whichever guise she was at the moment, and I can't remember which it was, that she was, when you know me not, I am Marie, or, you know, when you know me, I am the whore. But I can't remember where that was. I'll have to look.
It could be a play on words, you know.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
You know,
with the biblical,
in the biblical sense. Yeah.
Exactly. I'll find it. Go on without me. I'll find it.
I find on the page where Sophie and Barbara are looking up at the headless Promethea, who is the virgin whore.
Now, you know, I didn't see that as a headless Promethea. I saw that as just like an outfit in a store window.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Did anyone else?
I saw it as a headless Promethea.
Because there's no hands, there's no feet.
Right, I understand that, yeah.
Unembodied is what you're saying.
Yeah.
Well, it's given so much play, an entire panel, that I felt it might have more significance.
It's her outer trappings.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought it was a very Crowley statement on women. Very funny.
Well, that could be too, that it's all trappings and no substance.
Yeah, I kind of, well, that's my prejudice against Crowley speaking, but that's the way I saw it.
Well, they've had their trappings, the men, too, you know, so, okay.
I beg your pardon?
The men have trappings also. Men were peacocks for most of the time.
Yeah.
And only...
Oh, but the fact that she's headless, that
oh.
she has no body, I mean, there's nothing there but the trappings.
Oh,
you know?
I see.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Okay, so should we repeat the layout for Cynthia's sake?
Please.
Okay, first card, Six of Swords, science. Second card, priestess. Third card, lust. Fourth card, Six of Cups, pleasure. Fifth card, Four of Swords, truce. Sixth card, the universe.
Whoa.
Yeah. That's a big outcome, isn't it?
Arc of Influence, Hierophant. That's the seventh card. Eighth card is Swiftness. Eight of Wands is Swiftness. And the ninth card is Love, Two of Cups. That's why I said this card layout. Forget it. My goodness.
I did find the passage that I was talking about. It's on the page that you and I read. You read the left-hand side. I read the right-hand side, Johanna.
Yeah.
It's on the left-hand side about halfway down. It says, Virgin am I to they that know me not, and whore am I to they that know me. So, I don't know. To me, that just seemed very significant. To me, it speaks of she is neither really virgin nor whore, but it's in others' perception.
Yes.
They still haven't grasped her real essence.
Well, the divine feminine, that is very interesting. Of the three Abrahamic religions, anyway, it's, one aspect of it. In Christianity, the Roman Church embraces the Virgin Mary.
Mm-hmm.
And she has many aspects.
But we have also embraced Mary Magdalene, a lot of us,
yes.
too.
Yes, yes. And recently we have embraced Mary Magdalene.
And also so there's the cult of the Black Virgin, in the sense we don't know Mary Magdalene or Virgin
Black
Mary.
Yeah.
Definitely. It's just a gorgeous tradition.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, in fact, it was Jung that said that was one of the most brilliant things the church ever did. And he was not a Catholic by any means. But he acknowledged that brilliance to have embraced, in his words, the divine feminine. So, for what it's worth. And it's interesting that Alan Moore does. There are many ways he could have depicted the divine feminine, but he did also embrace that aspect. Which I think is still very much treasured by many people throughout the world, even if they're not Catholic.
Okay, shall we go to analyze the reading?
Yeah, definitely.
Before you start, what is the lust card? Is that 8 in Crowley's deck?
The last card?
I think it's 11.
It's 11.
This is justice for 8.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But he has the lion on it. He has the lion moving.
Right.
On.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes. Actually, it's not justice. It's what? I mean, lust.
It's strength. No. I'm saying he reverses it from the weight deck.
Right.
Well, he goes back to the original
mm-hmm.
The Marseille tradition. Yeah.
Yeah.
Does that answer your question, David? It is
yes,
the strength card, but it is card 11.
Okay, it's card 11. Okay. Thank you.
I wonder how he equated lust and strength.
Well,
I guess virility, meaning from a male point of view, strength.
Didn't that come up in a previous
yes.
chapter? Yeah, I remember talking about that.
Yeah, I do too. But I don't remember what we said.
I don't remember either. But it is an interesting change and a very Crowley change.
Lust doesn't necessarily have to be sexual.
No, it doesn't.
No.
It's like joie de vivre, you know? Yeah. It's like taking over, a control of your life.
Well, also, if you look at the image...
Look at the avarice.
Look at the image of lust.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, here she is riding the beast with abandon, right? Mm-hmm. And you notice it's the four-headed beast.
Right.
You know,
more than four heads.
Or seven-headed beast.
Mm-hmm.
The Hydra, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the... Yeah. You know, so she... And then, of course, in the classic strength one, it's the Marie figure is is taming the beast with gentility.
Yeah.
And here she has embraced the beast and is whipping up it to its full fury.
Right. Well,
it's a very different orientation towards strength.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but Alan Moore uses the strength card as the lust card in the drawing here.
Yes, he does.
He does.
Mm-hmm.
He calls
the top deck throughout.
He said, but he doesn't call it 11. He calls it 8. Well, maybe not.
No.
No, I don't think so.
No, I guess not, because that still goes between Gavura and Hesed, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, let's see. This is interesting. Also, just to let you when I mentioned the triangles, you know, with the adepts, those,
uh-huh.
And that image comes out of, and you could see it in Hellraiser 2, in which they talk about Leviathan and basically the subconscious, the labyrinth of the subconscious. I can't get over it. I mean, this is like, wow. This is right out of that movie.
Uh-huh.
Which is a very cycle. Did you ever, anyone ever see Hellraiser 2?
Yeah, oh, of course.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Yeah, Hellraiser is definitely one of the more interesting demonic movies that's been out
mm-hmm.
in a long time.
Yeah, the one and two.
Clive Barker is definitely
nice.
In fact, Clive Barker hung out in the OTO
mm-hmm.
When he was in L.A. Yeah. And he's also as gay as one can be, so...
I have a question, and I do respect very much Walt for saying this. When we went, I forget in what context, I think it was his Kabbalah class at his house, he discussed his trajectory of interest, how he started off joining one of the magical... how would you say, organizations?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was very eager to see magic. And nothing ever happened. And he became very disillusioned, and he left. You know, he said he had a very good time, everything was wonderful, but magic never took place.
Yeah, because, and I can give you my take on Wald with that. Wald was expecting magic to fit his preconceptions of it.
Okay.
And when it didn't meet that preconception, he was disappointed because he couldn't recognize that if he was going to see magic, he had to accept magic is, not as you preconceive it
mm-hmm.
to be. And that's always been his problem.
Well, he did. I'm not going to interpret. I'm just going to tell you what he said.
Right.
He did give a tangible interpretation of what he considered to be magic, something that he could perceive with his five senses.
Ah, that's the first thing.
That's sort of like saying, I am going to win the marathon before I can crawl. I'm going to run the marathon before I can crawl.
You know, now I feel upset because I'm not here to criticize it. I'm here to say that.
Right.
I believe he is an accurate reporter of what he perceived, and he didn't perceive anything with his five senses.
Well, because he was expecting to win the marathon before he could crawl.
Well, I'm not going to make that judgment call, but what I am going to ask is what is to be expected?
From magic?
Yes.
Ooh, you know what? Okay, I'm going to give you a very interesting story. I am, my cousin has a Red Hat Society. you know, the red hats. That's a little ladies group. Wears a red hat. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The red hat, the purple.
Whatever.
Yes.
Now, I'm supposed to be, now I'm doing like maybe two different October things going on. Our group of red hats do not want anything too frightening, right? Guess where we're going next week? We're going to Greenwood Cemetery on a trolley tour. I cannot get over, because I have always, those spirits are abounding there. They're jumping out of the graves in Greenwood Cemetery. It is, I have always brought home a spirit. Always. That I have to say, okay, bye-bye at the door.
Go back to the cemetery. Go on.
You tangibly feel it over you. It's amazing. So, and here I am, and I'm laughing to myself. Because do I say to them, guess what, ladies? Your fears are going to be realized after taking this trolley tour?
Well, I don't know how that relates to organizational magic.
Okay. The thing is that it's not the five senses. Because we're not in touch with our five senses at all times.
You don't know that. I mean, everyone listening to this conversation knows that. I'm just saying, in other words, I wanted to clarify. I wanted to clarify, what is chaos magic versus golden door magic versus
Enochian magic?
Exactly. What do they look for? What are they seeking?
Well, actually, those questions are not relevant, and they're not answerable. And it's simple.
But we are working with Alan Moore's Crowley. He was a member of Odo.
But let me finish. Let me finish.
Certainly.
We can look at them as literary traditions that you know, they have these influences and that influence. But in terms of what they're actually doing with magic, we're not talking about that. We're not dealing with that. In this phone call at all, we're not really dealing with that. And what we're doing is it's sort of what we're doing at best in this conversation over this call is this is an invitation to magic. And yeah, there are magical elements to an invitation to magic, but it's an invitation. It takes a reasonable amount of experience to be able to really have a full sense, a lived sense of what the differences are between these styles of magic.
Or between magic and non-magic, for that matter.
Well, the church, the mass, is a magical act.
Yes, yeah. I grant you that.
The transfiguration.
And so what's the purpose of going to church?
That to somebody who's pious, they would say they would consider you being impious by reducing the mass to magic, because it's
I think even theologians would agree with that. But taking the mass as an example of that, Paul, you don't wish to go further, so we won't.
It's a loaded question that should, I mean, we have smatterings of information, because we, if you just look at the church and that is a magical act, why, and you're participating in the mass and you go for the Eucharist, for what reason? Are you going there to bless yourself? Yeah.
To receive the body of Christ. And that's the first.
And you're supposed to take it with you for that week. Because you got to get it recharged once a week at least.
Right.
So for that week, the same thing. The same thing as a magical act is the absolution, is in confession. Mm-hmm. All of a sudden, three Hail Marys get you out of, doing the most horrible acts going, you know, and you wonder why. But you're not supposed to sin anymore. Mm-hmm. You see, everything's nullified if you sin no more. That's the secret task, is go mm-hmm. out and sin no more.
Mm-hmm.
That's sort of like telling it, and go out and drink no more.
Right, an alcoholic, yeah. Exactly. So, and you're supposed to understand why you shouldn't sin no more. But many people don't understand that. And they still go through the motions.
They're capable of doing it, yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Oh, I know. A lot of people just go through the ritual mm-hmm. without any depth of knowledge or understanding or even wanting to understand what's behind it all. They think the ritual itself will protect them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would contend, is not in the ritual, it's in the intent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some of the things that we are discussing today are summarized up in a question that is asked at the beginning of this chapter, which is, what is the relationship between Doth,
mm-hmm.
Nina, and Chokma?
Mm-hmm.
Chokma.
That's yeah.
Learning,
a question.
Knowledge, and understanding. No, learning, wisdom, and understanding.
And that's exactly what we're doing here. The reason we're in some of these impasses is that we are attempting to bisect this thing. We went through the abyss of Doth, mm-hmm. of knowledge. We're now, we're faced with a very interesting image, which I don't think we've fully dealt with, which is a Whore of Babylon image of Bina,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
which we haven't dealt with yet in terms of significance. And, of course, then we also have the issue of wisdom that'll be coming up at some point. And
we have a reading that's extremely powerful, that's supposed to give us at least how would you say, an exegesis on all of this. But I don't understand what it's
Well, not on all of them. No. Specifically, the image that what we're dealing with now is being an understanding. And as I said earlier, I think this is before you joined the call, understanding is submissive. And the term in English, understanding, right?
You stand under.
As you allow the thing itself to dominate you in such a way that you understand it, you hold it up, you have a way of seeing where its foundations are. You are
right.
under those
right.
foundations.
Right.
So it's a submissive in that way. This is being in science, it's which we have as our first thing. It's the submission to the object, to the way objects actually behave as opposed to the way we seemingly behave, you know.
Or we seemingly perceive them to behave.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, that often goes completely against, you know, the atomic theory of matter and stuff that science makes things work with, and technology makes things work with, is not the magic of earth, air, fire, water.
Right.
You know, which is definitely the language of experience. In other words, we still exist in the universe in our perceptual thing. We still translate all of these highly scientific terms into the language of experience, which is still poetically earth, air, fire, and water. And
I would posit that magic, today's magic is tomorrow's science, or much of today's magic is tomorrow's science.
I agree.
But
I think there's more to magic.
I would actually say that epistemologically, there are magics that science will never touch.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree.
There are sciences that magic will never.
Mm-hmm. And I think those are the intangible. I think there's an intangible aspect to magic that science will not be able to touch, because science is very rooted in the tangible.
There is very interesting here. I'm here on good old Wikipedia, and the difference, and I'm just putting in the words.
Uh-huh.
You know, understanding, Understanding is also called intellection, in a psychological process related to the abstract or physical objects such as a person, situation, or message, whereby one is able to think about it and use concepts to deal adequately with that object. And understanding is the limit of conceptualization. To understand something is to have a conceptualize it, to give it measure. Now, if you go to knowledge. Okay, expertise, the skill required by a person through experience or education, a theoretical or practical understanding of a subject.
A practical understanding.
Exactly. Awareness of familiarity gained by experience of a fact or situation. Then if we go to wisdom.
Which transcends everything.
Yes. Hold on. When in doubt.
Read the dictionary
is a deep understanding and realization of people.
Good grief.
Things, events, or situations resulting in the ability to choose or to act to consistently produce the optimum results with a minimum of time and energy. Wisdom is the ability to act optimally. Effectively.
Like a progression. There's knowledge, there's understanding, and then there's wisdom.
Yeah.
But there's always a measure involved.
Yes.
Wisdom is a comprehension of what is true or right, coupled with the optimum judgment as to action. Just what I said. Remember, the children could be wise.
And the issue of measure is definitely means that what we're dealing with is Maya. Mm-hmm. We don't get to the.
I agree with you, Paul. Definitely.
But but in the classic view of the tree, the supernal triangle, which is what we're in now.
Mm-hmm.
Which is why
we're struggling so hard. We're
after Dobbs, wisdom and understanding are the two, the two hands of God going down into the world, but they maintain their divine qualities. They're rays of the sun from the crown. If the crown were the sun itself, as that understanding has a transcendent quality, which means it's beyond measure, and it also has, and also wisdom has a transcendent quality, which is beyond measure. Of course, then the question becomes, well, what is the nature of understanding as a transcendent quality that's beyond measure? And here's where we get to that the vision of the virgin whore, that one of the reason that this is, that it seems to be split. The split seems to be taking place is because of this sort of strange view. There is something, understanding does embrace something which is beyond measure.
Something that a dictionary can't deal with. Yeah,
obviously. We're talking about it and as a supernal, not necessarily. In other words, we're talking about it as it would be in a tree of life. And basically what this means is that understanding basically is like the big balloon of the universe that allows everything to be as it is. In other words, it's sort of like everything that takes place below the supernal triangle is taking place within the supernals, yet the supernals are never touched by them or changed by them or radically things. So that one of the popular views of modernist God is that creation is perfecting God, and that the reason we have creation is so that God can go to the nth of God's creativeness, of God's pure creation, by embracing all the chaos and stupidity that we are. But be that that as it may.
So he can know himself.
That's the process view. It's a Whiteheadian view of God. God is still becoming. God is still approaching God's own being. God's own being is never fully unfolded. Well, it's true. God's own being is never fully unfolded from the point of view of Maku. But we're in this bubble of being. Now, where is that bubble taking place? The bubble is taking place not really in understanding. And here's the part where it's taking place. It's taking place in Doth.
Yeah.
That's why it's unnumbered.
Yeah.
What do you think about that, Johanna?
Yeah, I totally concur.
You agree?
That's the soup. Doth is the soup.
Well, that's why we record these things.
Would you repeat that, Paul?
Repeat what?
Where understanding is taking place.
Understanding is taking place. Understanding is taking place where understanding is.
What?
But the bubble of being is not. In other words, the bubble of being is taking place. In other words, where the rest of the tree sort of implodes is in Doth. Which isn't there at all.
And the paths to and from it are also invisible.
But in the storyline, we're coming up the tree of life, and we're moving up to the Sephira. And
right.
We went to Doth last week, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
Doth, to me, is the gateway, and the next place you can go is the door, and the door is on Doth. Doth is the path of the Empress. Right? And
right.
That's the beginning of the Supernal Triad. So you go through the gateway to the door and get into the Supernal Triad. We can't go any higher than Ambina and the human being.
Well, if you think of Doth as the point of the triangle.
I hear that stuff all the time. I hear it from the Jungians. I hear it from a number of old rabbis. They're always saying this stuff. God will take you as far as God wants to take you, and stop drawing measures in the sand and say, "Go no farther." You know?
So how can you be part of the Supernal Triad? You have to be there after death. That's the highest you can go to.
You are part of the Supernal Triad because you've never left it.
Yes.
But in order to realize that, you do have to die. You do have to die, but you don't have to die a physical death. You have to die a death to this world.
That's the journey of return. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I think we have to go through that door psychologically or spiritually, whatever, to get to the highest level of our quote-unquote consciousness. I don't know.
Yeah, well, and that's it. I mean, ultimately, I don't know is the thing you have to let go of.
Mm-hmm.
Because what you're letting go of is the I that's attempting to know. So you have in a lot of ways, when you get to the Supernals, it's called the unknowing.
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
And like in that famous Middle English word called the cloud of unknowing.
Mm-hmm.
There really is. There is a kind of complete unraveling of everything you understand and know. It just becomes like, you know, it's like you're wearing a coat or something or clothes, and everything becomes unraveled. You know, all the weaving that took place all of a sudden becomes utterly porous, and then just falls away into a jumble of meaningless threads.
Okay, let's get.
Teresa said the same thing. Eckhart said the same thing.
Yes.
Down in the cross. I mean, you could go on, and certainly to Rumi. I mean, you can go on and on. Bakhtin.
But you know, I don't see it so much as an unraveling, although it is. But it's unraveling something that should never have been woven in the first place, because
but
the act of weaving it in the first place is what separated us to start with.
Okay,
yeah,
people, we have to get to the reading. We have to get to this reading.
let's deal with. Actually, a lot of this stuff is actually dealt with in this reading. For instance, the first, which is the Six of Swords, is science.
Uh-huh.
This is our sense. This is sort of the skill set that we kind of bring with us.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
You know, and then we are faced with the High Priestess.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so we already know that this is, you know, of course we see the high priestess in her more worldly sense.
And also the veil.
Pleasure, right?
Yeah, the high priestess here is definitely, keeper of the veil.
Yeah.
Right.
And to go beyond the veil means a type of death, initiation.
Yeah.
And which they did do.
And of course, the issue here that she does is she brings forth, this is sort of like saying yes to all of existence, which is the lust and the pleasure, Six of Cups. And of course, the hidden motivation is the Four of Swords.
Which, kind of wanting to get away from it all.
I think it's more of an understanding in the sense that the dictionary, that Paul described to be under, to stand under and to be submissive is kind of a truce with
It's also a subversion. The other thing that you can say about understanding it is subversive. You know, so sometimes, you know, this is where the servant, you know, will do what the master wants, but does it just a little differently, messes it up just a little bit. It's subversive. There's a subversiveness in understanding.
But also there's something here. There has to be a war. There's a war. When I see the card truce, when I see the Four of Swords, rest from strife or truce, as we know it, you don't have that unless there's a war going on, and the war within
the
self.
There's a war going on in almost every human being?
Exactly. And the war, whichever way it is, in fact, the war in the sense of even in this chapter that we read is the coming to terms with the whore and the mother, whore mother virgin thingamajiggy going on there, you know? How do we reconcile it? It's reconciliation.
Yeah, because it seems so such a dichotomy, you know. It seems like it's something that, you know, ne'er the twain shall meet, and yet they do. So
right.
Yeah, and I think we need to give ourselves literally time out to contemplate that, but not even contemplate it. I don't think it's something that we can understand through active trying to understand it. I think it's something that just has to come to us. And in order to let it become,
we're so over-civilized and acculturated. I think actually our ancestors would understand this much better than we do. And in a visceral kind of way.
Without knowing that they know it.
Exactly.
Let's not forget the elemental positions here. We have lust in air.
Yeah.
And intellect.
Fire in air, right?
Yeah. We have the lust in the position of the element of air.
Yeah.
You know, that's interesting because of the headless or bodiless, unembodied Promethea that we saw and that was so puzzling to me. And the fact that lust is in air, it's this overreaching, I'll speak for myself, for understanding, knowledge, wisdom, and probably the whole exercise that we're doing is that. Anyone involved in esotericism, certainly.
And also, how about the high priestess in water? I mean.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's a rightful place, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, but at the same time, it just shows. Go ahead.
Something you just said, Cynthia, reminded me, I don't know if any of you are Star Trek people, but in the movie Insurrection, the Star Trek movie Insurrection, there was a quote in there that I loved. Picard is sitting out on this cliff with this beautiful woman who lives in this place, a native of this place, and she is literally making time slow down. And he sees that. He sees everything around him moving slowly. And he says to her, "How do you do that?" And her response was, "It took us a very long time to learn that it doesn't take very long to learn."
Wow.
And that to me was just one of the most profound lines in any movie I've ever seen anywhere. It's like we can know this if we just let go of the frantic seeking to know it.
Right.
It will come to us if
right.
we let it come.
I think
and
it
that
comes
to me is
most human
point.
Beings, but for split seconds here and there.
Oh, yes.
Where time seems to stand still and
yes.
you're overwhelmed with a sense of love and gratitude and
yeah.
connection to all things.
Yeah. It's a very transcendent experience.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Now,
we might see Chokhmah as the marriage, which I guess we will see when Barbara and Steve finally hook up. The marriage of understanding and wisdom, or the which is where these two things they appear different, are basically the same. This is where they ultimately connect. I think that's our next chapter. And of course, we also know that we're also going to get some of the more abstract chapters coming up in the next couple of weeks.
Oh boy!
don't miss this. Is the grand finale?
I think this was pretty abstract. The one we just are dealing with here today.
This is not only abstract; it was tough. It was a tough read because of the fonts.
Yeah.
It was a lot of words, and we got some
even more difficult ones coming up when we get to the next one and the one after that. So, and then and I think the next three chapters are pretty intense. But of course, this is we might want to pay more attention to the artwork, since these particular chapters also won a lot of awards for
yeah.
attempting to depict what is essentially not depictable, not picturable, and that way it's a kind of an interesting thing.
I have to say, in reading this chapter, there was one passage that absolutely stopped me in my tracks during the reading. I actually had to stop and absorb it before we went on. I don't know if it was just something intensely personal. It's when Marie is speaking and she says, "In its red vintage is distilled the moment of my dreadful understanding, unexpressed, that cometh privately in dark and silence." That
well,
is called
apocalypse.
Well,
she saw her son crucified.
Yeah, it's a very private thing. I think the word privately is what stopped me there. It was like, this is a very personal thing for each and every person. it's intensely personal, this coming to this understanding.
Well, my sister said something interesting tangentially. She said life is about loss.
Mm.
And I think that's hard to argue on one level. And I think for some reason when you said that, I think she is the one we go to in those times, in those understandings, because she understands.
Yeah.
And beyond that, I don't think there are many words.
Yeah.
I would like to continue with our reading
of the
layout.
Yeah,
yeah. Mainly because after we've gone through this truce, the thing that comes forth is is the universe. So in some ways, one of the things this is sort of telling you, or it's telling me in a way, it might be a bias of mine, is one of the ways that we can approach understanding is as a contemplative act. And by contemplative act, I'm talking about a deep, radical acceptance of things, which is not... it's not something you strive for. It really has to do with being open to and accepting, everything as it is.
It doesn't take long to learn. Basically,
and it's in that quiescence. It's in that quiescence where all the struggle is stymied for a while. That the universe unfolds. In Sufism, they talk about this level of perplexity, and the level of perplexity is when you approach the supernals, because this is where all opposites are their opposite. So in other words, everything that's opposite is its opposite. So in other words, it's the unity of all oppositions. There are no oppositions anymore. And so all of your, you know, but this, but that, this, that, or that, this is different than that, all senses of differences are left behind, and yet and you say everything is paradoxical, but it's paradoxical to where there seems to be no rest. In other words, you're falling, because there's no place to stand. And in that sort of contemplative moment, which is timeless, this is where the universe emerges. This is where you can accept or see how the supernals work as opposed to how the relatives work, how things are in interrelationship, how the transformations work, all of which are sort of lesser than the supernals. The supernals aren't concerned with the great transformations in that sense. And so the universe then becomes exactly that. It becomes a one verse. It becomes, you know, one word. It becomes completely in a kind of vibrant stasis in which all things can exist, or as I was calling it, the big bubble.
It's the birth canal, too. I always thought of it, I always use the universe as doorways opening, and what's the biggest doorway in our lives?
Yeah.
But being born.
Surprise, yeah. Ooh, how did that happen? Yeah.
Exactly.
And then, of course, the next one comes up is the Hierophant.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's the Hierophant. You know, he's got his keys to the kingdom. I know where the birth canal is, and I'm putting a clock on it.
Right, exactly.
Exactly.
And then, here's the interesting one, though. What's the Eight of Wands doing up there, sitting, as it were, between the,
Well, I will go back to the quote I told you guys.
I totally agree with you.
It doesn't take a long time to learn. You just have to be open to it. It will come to you.
So in other words, it's swift. And also, so in some ways, the Eight of Wands is a doubling of the Four of Swords.
Yeah.
Also, look at the artwork on the Eight. You have two triangles, well, two pyramids meeting. Uh-huh. In either way, and that to me says a lot.
Yes, it does.
You know, we're basically dealing with the lower triangle, but you need the upper triangle too.
Yeah. And if you look at the Rider Waite deck, it's these arrows that are coming from the higher source to the lower source.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's as above, so below. You know, it's basically an eight.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a lemniscate skate on, on vertical lemniscate. And the energy is coming from the divine to the mundane.
Also,
and it's coming very
there's another observation here. Lust, the multi-beast. Beast, the multi-headed beast, becomes the. Does it become exalted within the universe and the Hierophant? You see the imagery.
Yeah,
what I'm saying.
Yeah,
all of a sudden, it becomes orderly.
Right. So yeah, what seems chaotic, or seems
in lust. Becomes orderly in the universe and the Hierophant card.
Yeah, and all.
But the outcome card is love, which.
No, the outcome card is the universe.
Well, universe.
But in the arc of influence, I'm sorry, last card is love.
Yeah.
And
maybe unconditional love.
That's what I'm asking. It trumps the concept lust, or the word, or the etymology, and then certainly universe, as well. Pleasure in the Waite card is an expression at times, depending on as an aspect of love. But what does the Thoth deck mean by love? Because I don't see much love.
We have Venus in Cancer. Joy.
Yes.
Are you there, darling?
I am here.
Okay. We call upon your knowledge.
Venus in Cancer.
Venus in Cancer. Cancer is the kind of nurturing, maternal type of energy. And all the water signs tend to be fairly intuitive. Pisces is the most, but I include Cancer in that as an intuitive sign.
Sure.
So, and then Venus, you know, the goddess of love. So the goddess of love that is in that place of nurturing and...
Mm-hmm.
You know, but the other thing, too, is I alluded to earlier, that the Chokmah is in some ways the hierogamos. It's the great marriage, and which will take place between Barbara and Steve. And it also represents, so that the Two of Loves means that understanding, as profound as this is still, in its supernal sense, needs to find its mate.
Also, look at what Barbara's going through to find the love of her life.
Yeah, right.
My God, I don't know whether I would do that.
You wouldn't do that, would you?
No, I don't know. I don't know if I would. I mean, maybe because I'm incapable of having.
She's exalted as a Promethea, as one of the Prometheas.
Yeah, that's
And that's...
And how many of us would do it?
Right. Barbara might not do it, but Barbara's
Promethea definitely would.
Yeah. Also, there was another subtle thing that took place here right at the end that we kind of skipped over, but because we were going on about it earlier, in the earlier chapters, Boo-Boo becomes Barbara.
And
so that this is where, so at this level of Bina, the holy guardian angel becomes completely integrated with the persona of the person moving up there.
Mm.
In other words, there's no separation anymore.
Yep.
Mm. No, it's like...
I was thinking of the Marseille, the weight, and the top decks. In the sense that the Marseille decks reflect sort of what happened, the reason for. The weight deck, the now of things, and the tough deck, the endings of things, because it seems so apocalyptic, not necessarily in a pejorative way.
Uh-huh.
But it is an apocalyptic deck to me.
Mm-hmm.
Also, they alluded at one point, I forget where in this chapter, when they were talking about the chariot, I think it's Mary, what he calls Marie, or Mother Mary, pouring out the chalice and saying, this is what the chariot takes.
Mm-hmm.
And in the image, there's a drop of red on the chalice that this charioteer, and I've always said, I don't even know if there's anything within the armor.
Yeah.
Any being within the armor, or is it just armor? That's one of the questions I have about that card.
Hmm.
But certainly it's a grail kind of image.
And I, you know, on that same page where it shows the blood flowing down through the head of the charioteer across the bosom of the woman in the lust card, then the panel below that, we've seen that panel before. And I think the very first issue of Promethea. That's
what a memory.
Promethea going out into the desert.
Mm.
Right.
I love this chapter. I love this chapter. I could spend days.
I find this chapter to be very, very dense.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot here.
Yeah.
And has anyone taken up the top deck who hasn't worked with it before because of this?
Oh, I have.
I've
been working with the top deck. I've been doing all my readings lately with the top.
Avoided top. I couldn't connect with it. And when reading Promethea, when I started with this group, it was just like all of a sudden it started, not just me, it was singing to me.
Yeah.
Really?
I mean, I would turn up a card and instantly I knew, I would know
Interesting.
What it was.
Yeah. Cynthia, you've been embraced with an invitation to deal with the Toff deck.
Oh, I see that. I do see that.
If you don't take it up, it may not return to you.
Yeah.
I mean, you may not have that.
Doesn't it prove these layouts? How many? We've gone through almost 22 layouts on the Toss deck concerning Promethea. I do not take it any credit for the magic of the deck. I'm just a vehicle, you know, which I am mediumistic, so I'll give that as one of my little talents here. But the thing is that it rings true so far. I don't want to give any kibosh, but so far it rings true. The thing is, when you're dealing with knowledge, any type of knowledge, especially tarot, you have to let your prejudices of what the hearsay go.
Yeah.
You have to.
What is also interesting, we're working non-personally with these readings.
Yeah.
And I can very well see the Toff deck as being a good deck to ask non-personal questions, but about chapters or points of clarification of information, etc., etc. But I don't see being able to take the Toff deck out, for instance, at the reader's studio, and having a comfortable, even experienced reader across from me.
Well, maybe you should try it.
I don't think I could have before this, but I think I
could. Also, this is where I get with my ladies, the red hats, who think that going into a cemetery, one of the most charged cemeteries going, all cemeteries are charged, and they're saying, oh, this is light fun.
Yeah.
Ladies!
I will offer the long-time quote, there is none so blind as he who will not see. You know,
mm-hmm.
So I think a lot of, you know, their very naivete may protect them.
I was just about to say, it's a form of protection if they're not ready.
Yeah. And here I am with my niece, and my niece has read Promethea.
Mm-hmm.
So she's, and we're going to go there, and we're going to have our good metaphysical occult fun.
Well, do your own protective
be
spell before
but, you
know.
We do have to remember that in the 19th century, up until even the early 20th century, cemeteries were often places where people went for picnics.
Yes, this is one of them.
And that's a Mexican tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Or in the
and it's coming up.
In the spirit
Halloween.
Of the Whore of Babylon. Also, trysting places.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, yes,
right.
Definitely.
And isn't there Mother Death, the skull thing, going on with the drug dealers from Mexico and the United States?
The cult of El Muerta. Muerta? M-U-E-R?
Santo Death, right. Santo Muerta, Santo Death. That doesn't have to do with specifically with cemeteries. I can say, you know, my family's never been one to go to cemeteries.
Okay, I'm sending everyone here. I don't know if all of you are on my mot list, but please share it, Paul. This is a picture of some of the sculptures. Oh, you saw some of them.
At the cemetery?
Oh,
at Greenwood Cemetery.
Yeah, right.
Greenwood Cemetery.
Yes, in which I always said, the Reader's Studio really should do a trolley tour.
Where is that, on Long Island? Or
no, in here in Brooklyn, New York.
In Brooklyn, okay.
Yes.
I never heard of a trolley being available before.
Yeah, now there's available, because I got news for you, walking those hills. And
you've always said.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's interesting that now they make a trolley available.
Mm-hmm.
How many people?
Cemetery on a trolley tour. It just all of a sudden struck me as totally ludicrous.
How many? Not if you had to walk it. How many people can get on a trolley?
I think 40.
Well, maybe that's something that you might want to mention for 2011.
They didn't.
Yeah.
No, because to book a trial, Walden and Ruthanne did not want to go through it. Through the, doing the work.
Yeah.
They have enough work to do.
Yes, they do. That is true.
Joy or come on, who's our other silent person?
Val.
Does Joy or Val, do you have anything to say in closing if you're still with us?
I don't have anything to say.
No? Oh, okay.
I usually get lost in the Tree of Life because I know so little about it.
Well,
there's worse places to get lost.
Yeah, you know, getting lost in Bina is not the worst place. At least you'll be. At least you'll have a good time here on Earth.
I want to say,
be a great party girl. How about you, David? You got anything you want to say in closing?
No.
Wrap up.
I want to say something about the Arc of Influence because I think that was really a wild one this time.
Oh, yeah.
I think Font, to me, is the inner guide. The inner guidance, and the Eight of Wands is the lightning path on the Tree of Life. It's very swift.
Oh, very good.
Quickly, or it moves up the tree very quickly. And if you go into your inner guidance, and you'll get the insight in a very quick way. It'll come to you very quickly, and you'll find that energy of love pouring into your being. That's the way I read that Arc of Influence. I think it's a powerful reading. I think the whole thing was a powerful reading.
Yeah.
I think it's a really insightful, and it also will bring us into Chokmah, which is next week. And
thank you, David. That was very, very
we will have a good time next week. I hope most of us can make it. We're actually reaching the climax of Promethea, but the full story arc is worthy of attention if people.
Yeah, like what's he going to do in chapter book 5? I can't imagine.
Yeah.
It's sort of like on the lamb from the apocalypse.
Uh-huh.
But you'll see. In fact, actually, the book 5 was sort of problematic in a way. It took a lapse before they decided to finish it off.
Well, there were probably
things are very difficult.
There were political things he was going through with DC Comics and all that other stuff.
I wanted to mention I mailed to Paul, Johanna, David, Joy, maybe that for some, and I'll send it on to Val. I would need, Marie Beth, I don't have your email.
Well, are we still being recorded, or can I?
We're still, okay, should I shut off the recording, dear?
Yeah, shut it off.
Okay, hold on, wait a moment.